When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Wow, man, I keep forgetting, like, college football or college basketball started too. Like, Amy and I went out last night. We walked into a place and the Cougs are on TV. I'm like, the Cougs are playing Alabama tonight? What the hell's going on? What month is it right now? Duke lost last night. I normally feel like a tremor in the force when Duke loses, and I felt nothing last night. College basketball started up is weird. I'm just looking at the scoreboard on the screen in here. Football is here, though. Week 13 of the NFL season, Texans and Jags. Jags are 2-9. Jags are 3-14 since a win over the Texans in Week 12 last year at NRG Stadium. If you recall, that was the game where the backup, the Texans replacement kicker Matt Amendola boinked a 58-yard potential game-tying field goal off the crossbar. Jags went to 8-3 in that game. Texans fell to 6-5. It's funny, the Texans fell to 6-5 in that game, and I still feel like in the postgame, everybody was probably, even off a loss to the Jags, probably like, hey, but we're 6-5 and we're moving in the right direction. Texans are 7-5 right now, and you'd think that they were the biggest dumpster fire in the league based on how everybody feels because of the offense, but such is the nature of expectations and such is the nature of being told that a problem is fixable, and it continues to not only not get fixed, but it gets worse. So hopefully it gets better this weekend. Things get better this weekend with the Jags. Seth, do the Jags do anything as well as the Titans play? We know the Titans are not a great team, but their interior off or defensive line is elite. It's really good with Jeffrey Simmons, Tavondre Sweat. The defense as a whole is very, very good. And that lined up perfectly for the Titans against what the Texans do very poorly, which is protect and open up holes with the interior of the offensive line. Is there anything the Jags do that should scare Texan fans? Maybe even some of the same stuff the Titans did, I would guess.
For one, Brian Thomas, the receiver, first and foremost, is nasty. And Trevor Lawrence hasn't been playing as bad as the team has been or the circumstances around him. But for the Texans, who still struggle at giving up deep shots, obviously, versus quarterbacks that connect with a good wide receiver, that's in a week where you're going in short a safety, because you lose Jalen Petrie, who wasn't technically a safety, but Jimmy Ward's going to take his spot. So you don't feel awesome about the safety position right now. Yeah, I think it's Brian Thomas on deep shots when somebody screws up in the secondary is probably what I worry about most in terms of just a fly in the ointment in a matchup that on paper still looks like it should favor the Texans. That's a big deal.
And that was a game in Week 4. You recall the Texans game in Week 4. They played the Jags once already this year. Came down to a game-winning drive at the end. It's probably the last time that the Texans as a team in a crucial spot did something really good in the second half offensively. That game-winning drive where it culminated with the Darius Gumbawale touchdown. But if you recall in that game in Week 4, Seth, that was another one of those games early in the season where wide receivers were getting open on deep shots, and Brian Thomas was one of them, and the quarterback, in this case Trevor Lawrence, was just missing them. A lot like Anthony Richardson in Week 1, where Adee Mitchell gets open a couple times, and he just overshoots him. Brian Thomas was getting open in that game against the Texans' DBs. Now, they're missing a couple of the guys that would normally draw some attention. Christian Kirk is out for the rest of the season. Gabe Davis, who was one of their free agency signings this offseason, out for the rest of the season. So at the wide receiver position, it is kind of a one-man show right now.
I think on the other side of the ball, when you look at the Jaguars, a horrible pass defense, respectable enough run defense, and I think their front seven, their defensive line, their linebackers are a respectable bunch. But the best players are probably the edge rushers, and Hines Allen, their best guy amongst them. I don't worry as much about defensive ends as I worry about defensive tackles. So I don't like this. This Jaguars defense doesn't have the same ability to attack the weakness of your offense, the interior offensive line, as well as the Titans could. And the Titans are a genuinely solid defense, I think. They just, the numbers don't all bear it out because their offense has been so bad. So it's not the same challenge, but it's not like, they're not as bad as, say, the Dallas Cowboys defense.
Right.
Yeah, this is certainly, and I think the line, what has the line gone down to?
It's down
game?
To five. It started at six.
So it's not moving wildly or anything.
No. And it's not moved through like a crucial number yet either, like three or anything like that. They get Campbell back, the cornerback who missed the first game. So that's good, and they gave him a big extension this offseason. So that's a guy they're getting back in the secondary that'll make life a little more difficult for a quarterback who's had interception issues of late, CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Here was Doug Peterson earlier this week, head coach of the Jags, talking about CJ Stroud and where he sees CJ Stroud among quarterbacks in the NFL.
Listen, this league, this business, playing the quarterback position is hard, right? Playing any position is hard. And he's an exceptional quarterback, good young quarterback in this league that the league needs. He's an exciting player. I don't know everything that goes on down there. You know, I'm sure there's been injury. You know, guys have missed. He's missed his playmakers from time to time. And then there's the film. There's the film out there. There's ways to, you know, what he's put on film, you know, the explosive plays, things of that nature. Defenses have time to scheme that, right? To play defense against it. So it's the natural progression, and he's going to continue to make his plays and lead that football team and continue to be a great player. And he's just going to continue to get better each and every game, each and every season. But I think one thing, and I don't know CJ, you know, personally, other than just talking to him when we play, but he knows that he's a piece of that offense, right? He's a piece of that team, and he's going to continue to improve and get better to help his team win, just like Trevor is here, or, you know, Josh Allen is here. You know, they're one piece to the big picture, to the whole pie.
I think the big thing with the Texans offense, it just looking at it from 35,000 foot, is that it's an offense that wants to tie the run game and the pass game together. Do all that. And that works out really, really well when guys are actually performing and can do the things you're asking them to do. But they can't run the ball. They just haven't been able to all year, including in games in which Joe Mixon ran for over 100 yards. The Patriots game, Joe Mixon had one huge run. And Damian Pierce had one huge run. The sum total on the rest of the carries, there were less than 2 yards per carry in that game. So when you go against good teams, where, hey, even if you break a long run or something, down in and down out, you can't run the football. And when I watched the Titans play against the Texans, you could see, wow, that defense knows that the Texans cannot run the football. Their linebackers do not give a single damn about your play action. Like, they're not going to bite on anything because they can handle it with one hand tied behind their back. And they did. And a lot of the things that Bobby wants to do, because they cannot run the football against good run defenses especially, and sometimes even against bad ones with any kind of consistency, it throws a gum into the entire system. And it's kind of like this isn't even fair to the Rockets to bring this up, but like when the Rockets are really good offensively, but, you know, they rely heavily on threes, they go against a good team like the Spurs in the playoffs, and the Spurs get over the course of a 7-game series, like, all right, hey, we know what we got to take care of. We can take care of the threes, and we got to take care of the plays at the rim, and we don't worry about anything else. Teams are approaching the Texans in a way where the Texans are not as good as the Rockets' offense was by a long shot, but teams have that same mentality. Like, all right, we know what they can hurt us with, and we know what they can't, and we're just going to go ahead and take care of it. Good luck running the ball. I mean, the entire first half of the season was, oh, did you see these guys are playing a lot of cover, too?
Yeah.
Huh? Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. Well, I guess we should try to run the ball. Oh, it's hard to run the football.
It was...
Hey, what the hell?
It was wild watching some of the All-22 snippets that got put out there from the Titans game of some of the run plays for the Texans and the linebackers for the Titans. Like, not even bothering, like, flowing with the direction of the play.
They're just sitting back waiting for the cutback.
They're waiting in the cutback lane.
Yeah,
Joe Mixon cutting back, like, hey, buddy, Fancy meeting you here, right here in this cutback lane.
It's like when you're dating a crazy woman and she leaves, but you know she's going to come back. You know, you're like, fine, go out, go do whatever. You'll be back.
You'll be back. In the cutback lane.
That's what the Titans were dating a crazy gal. And they're like, all right.
Josephine Mixon, crazy gal.
For you, and I'll emotionally abuse you when you get back here.
Yeah,
it's a big old dysfunctional thing going on last week.
I felt so bad for Mixon, man. I felt so bad for him. We're still getting a lot of texts from people. Our question a little bit earlier, if you're a Texan fan who's upset right now with the team, when was the honeymoon over for you? What was the moment or maybe collection of moments, maybe a window of the season where the relationship with you and the Texans became a whole lot more complicated and anger-driven? This is the first one I've seen of this. Mine was the pounding that the O-line took in the Green Bay game, and I would say the pounding CJ took because of the O-line. I'll add to that. It felt the same as the Astros early in the season watching our bullpen suck, and guess what happened when the postseason rolled around?
You know, the big thing about the Green Bay game that was really frustrating was how many miscommunications there were in pass protection. There were two instances in that game where Laremy and or Titus clearly thought that they and the running back in pass protection were handling one player while somebody else ran free. You know, there's a clear miscommunication about what they were looking for in protection. I think they've actually improved in that regard. Maybe part of it just because Patterson started playing center, so maybe the calls are a little crisper and more accurate or on time, whatever it might be. So they've improved in that regard. But you still have, round about the same time when they started figuring the calls out a little bit, a lot of teams, especially the ones with really good defensive tackles, realize like, why bother with a blitz when we've got Quinnen Williams on Kenyon Green or Kendrick Green, or then the next week we've got whomever on Juice Scruggs? Like, we're just gonna go right up the gut on him.
Yeah, no, Quinnen Williams becomes a one man blitz in that scenario right there.
He
runs right past the person. Have you seen that? It looks like Titus Howard has either a family member or a burner account that's been vociferously defending him on Twitter over the last week or so.
I've been trying to stay off social media more, so I catch little snippets and then I step away.
Yeah.
And I saw that there was drama between you and some guy that was angrily defending Titus Howard.
Titus.
He's from Alabama, this guy.
I didn't look at the bio to see where they're from.
I thought he was from Alabama, which is where Titus Howard went to school.
Yeah, Alabama State. Alabama? Yeah, he went to Alabama State. Yeah, he's from Alabama. And so, I've been told that it might
I stepped away.
Yeah. That it might be a family member. That particular person, whoever it is, there's some people speculating that it's Titus with a burner or whatever, because Titus, he got off of Twitter, which is probably
smart.
Yeah, very smart, I would say. Whoever it is, like, I don't have them bookmarked or anything like that. I didn't follow them, certainly. It's Tyran, T-Y-R-A-N, then with some numbers after it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no indication that they're a family member of Titus Howard, other than the, 90% of their tweets are defending Titus Howard on X.
This is the thing is, these days, whenever I see something that looks like it could be a burner account, I assume it's somebody who's created something that looks like a burner account.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people do this all the time. Look, this is obviously a burner account for such and such. I feel like more times than not, that's actually somebody who wants to make that person. It's somebody that, wants to make it look like Titus Howard has a burner account.
Yeah, let's say it's a family member. If it's Titus with a burner account, then he obviously there's issues there. Just get back on your regular account and do what you used to do. If it's a family member defending him, I don't have a big issue with it. I think some of the reasons they came after me with about my opinions, because I retweeted a couple plays that Titus struggled on. Titus is a fairly infuriating player for me this year. He's not having a good season. I don't like the interviews he does after games. His version of accountability is not really the version that I would deploy if I were him. You know, we were the better team. We should have won the game. The game slipped away. He said that against the Jets, where they clearly were not the better team. So I don't have a problem with them defending him, but the whoever it is, him or her, was coming at me with the "you never played," "you never played" thing. And you're probably trash on the radio too. And I'm like, all right, you're not the first person to say that either.
Right,
I've got nice callous skin on the "you're trash on the radio" thing. You can't get me with that one.
Well, plus if he says probably too, yeah. That's a whole, like I could if probably is in the realm of insults now, then boy, I'm excited.
Oh yeah,
like, I can lob all kinds of probably.
Appreciate you taking your foot off the gas a little bit. Most people tell me I'm definitely trash on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
That you're leaving it open that I might not be trash on the radio is really kind of you, sir or ma'am, whoever you may be. So yeah, I saw that man, whoever it is, just coming and just swinging away like Jon Snow standing there, well, Seth, with the sword in his hand,
yeah,
and all of Ramsay's army coming at him there, that meme, and they're ready to defend Tytus Howard.
I do that. The thing is that Tytus and Laramie are, they're fine. You know, like they're not, if you had five guys playing like them, you wouldn't have an atrocious offensive line. I think it's the sum total of everything where they're fine, but they're not better than fine. Laramie's very, very good in pass protection. Very good. But we're talking about an entire football game here. You know, and we're not talking about, hey, how are you good at one aspect of the game?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, he's sometimes okay as a run block, other times like looks like an adolescent being handled by an adult as a run blocker.
Yeah.
So neither one of them are Trent Williams.
Here's the problem. Okay, I'm glad you brought up Trent Williams. That's a good one. Or watch anybody on the Detroit Lions offensive line. The problem for the Texans is that that those two, while they are fine as tackles, getting paid a lot of money to be just fine
the
as tackles.
The standard isn't fine, right. Yeah.
Right. Well, and the standard from the tone, they're the tone setters of that room.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not set a tone of violence and viciousness like the good teams, like Trent Williams in San Francisco, or name a guy that's, you know, Penei Sewell or Ragnow or whoever on the offensive line in Detroit. There's any number of other offensive lines we could go through where the viciousness factor is much, much higher than the Tunsil and Howard-led Texans line.
Think of Penei Sewell. Think of Penei Sewell. Who's why is Penei Sewell better than Laramie Tunsil or Tytus Howard? Penei Sewell had a couple of really rough snaps versus the Texans.
Yeah.
He let up more pressures in that game than he had previously the entire season.
Yep.
He had some ugly snaps versus guys like Danielle Hunter. And yet, he also had plays in the run game or on screens where Collinsworth was annoyingly yet appropriately gushing about Penei Sewell.
Mm-hmm.
He's just in a different caliber. He's in a different weight class. Trent Williams, Penei Sewell, those guys are in a different weight class than anything close to what the Texans could hope to be at offensive.
Yes, level. Well put. Well put. All right, you can continue to text in here in the 9 o'clock hour, 5 hour Energy Fan Line. 5 hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Up next, did D'Amico Ryans give us a window into exactly how long Jalen Petrie is going to be out? And one move each AFC team should have made in the offseason. Which one is I've not looked at this yet. I'm going to try to guess which one is the move the Texans should have made. We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, a quick update on, I guess this is the closest thing to an update, on Jalen Petrie. This is D'Amico Ryans on the coach's show earlier this week. This is the most definitive thing we've gotten out of the team so far. A reminder, they're back at practice today, so we'll get an injury report today, which I would expect to have Petrie as a did not participate. Shoulder is what that's going to say probably. But here's D'Amico on his coach's show.
Jalen will be out for a couple weeks with a shoulder injury. Man, it's a gut punch to me. He's a guy that he did so much for me defensively and what I was able to call, what I was able to do just with the different things that he was able to do, whether it's blitzing or covering, like fitting in the run, like being a nickel and being able to fit in the run fit. The way he fits in a run fit is just, you don't see that much. Yeah. Most people are trying to keep him out of the run fit, but I'm trying to get Jalen into the action as much as possible. He's just been such a dynamic playmaker for us all throughout the year. Yeah. So, yeah, we had to pick up the slack there. It's going to be tough.
Yep.
That's because how active he was and, you know, just how instrumental he was to just how our scheme started to shift and change throughout the year. So we'll pick it up. We'll pick it up and try to hold it down for him as long as he needs to be out. But, man, praying for Jalen to have a speed and recovery.
Two things about that. One was that I choose to read into that relatively optimistically because D'Amico said he's going to be out for at least a couple weeks. If we look at the center for the Lions, Frank Ragnow, who's been playing on a partially torn pec all season long, he missed 2 weeks. One of them was a bye week. So I think this is very, if you're going to figure out whether Petrie can play through this or not, certainly keep him out this week. assess during the bye week and then make that decision sometime then, and depending on what Jalen Petrie's second opinion is, et cetera, et cetera. It's not out of the realm of possibilities that he plays. So there's that. The other part is, man, is D'Amico's talking about how good it is to be able to have Jalen Petrie do what he does in the run game as well, because he's basically playing linebacker a lot of the time.
Yep.
You know, where's Christian Harris, and does he come back, and what's he look like when he comes back?
Yeah.
Because that at least, man, that could end up being a nice little flavor change at the end of the season that teams don't have film on.
Yeah.
And if you got Azeez Elshire, Christian Harris, Henry Toa, Devin White, all those guys out there as linebackers potentially, then yeah, that can add a wrinkle that could work out for you and maybe make up for some of the loss of Jalen Petrie. But the other part on the loss of Jalen Petrie is, hey, all right, there were times where they had him playing slot corner against good receivers and we didn't feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you're going to have the same situation where you've got Jimmy Ward covering guys in the slot and you don't feel great about the matchup, but then you've got a worse safety behind you because Jimmy Ward's not playing safety anymore.
Yeah.
That's the part that's really tough with or without Christian Harris. But at least if, let's say Jalen Petrie can't come back, man, if they can get Christian Harris back at some point, that's hopefully a big boost, but we don't know how he's going to look, what kind of shape he's in, all that.
That would be something, man. Like, if just out of nowhere today, we got a Christian Harris's practice window has been open, because that's how these things go, is they allow them back at practice. You know, he won't be activated yet. You got to see how he looks in practice. You got 21 days of being of being allowed to practice with the team, and then after 21 days, the team's got to, you know, bleep or get off the pot with you. And
the one, we had one report that he might be back, or they're thinking about week 15.
After
right?
the bye. Yeah, that would be the Dolphins game after the bye week. Yes.
Yeah. So there's one more game before possibly Christian Harris news.
Yeah. And honestly,
maybe we get some news at some point, but it doesn't. I'm not looking at anything before that first game back for Christian Harris.
Look, I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, like, this Sunday shouldn't be a game where losing Jalen Petrie and not having Christian Harris back is the difference in winning or losing the game. Like, the Texans have plenty of other things that can cause a loss against the Jags. But after that bye week, Miami, and the topic on TV 2 seconds ago, Seth, on First Take was, is Miami in position to salvage their season? They're 5-6 now. Miami had been an afterthought with Tua out because they've been so bad. Like, their backup quarterback, there might not be a worse backup quarterback situation than the one the Dolphins were dealing with without Tua. Like, they had Skylar Thompson and Tim Boyle and just this Snoop Huntley. Like, it was bad. It was real bad in Miami. They got Tua back now, and that offense is clicking these last few games. And so, yeah, like, getting Christian Harris back, any reinforcements you can get back for Miami on the Miami week 15, 6 days later, the Chiefs, and then 4 days after that, the Ravens.
God,
they got to win this Sunday, man. They have to win this game this Sunday.
No. If they lose, look, I feel this Titans game was the one where, man, the scale flipped definitively to, pessimism, extreme panic, all of that. Losing to the Titans in the way that they lost, it was not a flukish loss.
Right.
They got beat by the Titans.
Yep.
And they're credit to just about everybody in Houston. I don't know if I've heard a single person say, well, you know, Kaimi missed a 28-yard field goal. Because A, we've seen Kaimi miss point-blank field goals already this season. And B, you got physically destroyed in too many places to ever feel like, versus a 2-win football team, that one just got away. Even if you had won that game, if Kaimi had somehow figured out a way to kick a 28-yard field goal and then you ended up winning after it got tied up, we would probably be pretty much at the same level of panic given the way the rest of that game went.
Yeah. No, you're right. In the big picture, nobody brought up Kaimi. And then to take it to maybe even a more micro level, nobody was blaming Kaimi either after the game. And I'm going based off of post-game show.
Yeah.
You know, we get the immediate temperature of people, especially leaving the stadium and whatnot. There wasn't a single phone call that we got talking about Kaimi Fairbairn missing a 28-yard field goal. And that's how it should be for a couple of reasons. One, I know Kaimi's been a little shakier of late, but Kaimi has far and away been one of the reasons why you're – 7-5 as opposed to 5-7 this season. You know, like he's been by and large very, very good, especially from distance. Even the one long one that he missed, the 58-yarder at the end of the Detroit game. You know, that was John Weeks had a high snap on that one, which Weeks took ownership of. But the other thing I would say about Kaimi missing the field goal too is and to the point where I think the fans are smart about this, that wasn't why you lost that game. There were 10 other there were 15 other dumb things the team did in that game that caused the Titans to be able to take that thing.
I thought Clint put it so well in the post game when he said, "Hey, you know, when you point to, well, the Texans have made mistakes in critical situations that have hurt them." Clint made a really good point, which is, well, of course they have, because they make those same mistakes in other situations. So it's not like they are a glisteningly clean operation, and then all of a sudden they choke up in the moment.
Right.
No, it's when you commit as many penalties as they do, when you make as many mental errors, when you flat out get beat physically as much as you do, yeah, it's going to show up in critical situations too. So the missed 28-yard field goal does not, there's no part of anybody, I don't think, who's been following the Texans who thought, oh boy, they just bad luck on that one.
Right.
If it were against the Lions or somebody like that, then I would spot you it, but not versus the Titans.
This will be one of those games this Sunday, Seth, that if they win the game, I think people are just going into the bye week with a sigh of relief. Like, okay, I mean, this is a team with a lot of issues and they're 8-5 right now. You know, like that's how I'll feel. Depending on how the game looks, you know, like if it looks like a conventional, if it looks like every other win over the Jags in Jacksonville the last few years where the Texans, you know, like last year, they beat them by 20 there in week 3. That was D'Amico's first win as head coach. They go there and take care of business. I'll be like, okay, you know, I feel good going into the bye week. And boy, do they have a tough menu coming out of the bye week. If they lose this game, then all this playing down to the level of competition talk, oh, how do they play down to the... I forget about the records. If you're 2-5 in your last 7 games,
right,
you're not playing down to the level of anybody. You are that level.
You know what you do? You go back and you say, wow, the Lions really played down to their level of competition.
That's exactly right. Yes.
The Green Bay really played down to the level of competition. You start to worry. You wonder about some of those teams. Like, oh, wow, they just don't seem to be as consistently good.
I'll point out that the Texans were +3 in turnover margin in both of those games, and they lost them. And that is the quintessential played down to. When you lose the turnover battle, but you still find a way to win the game, you have played down to the level of your competition.
You got, in hindsight, you go into that game, and if you think about the Texans as a bad team, or a mediocre team, what you'd say is, okay, the one thing that could hurt us is this opportunistic Texans defense, and we let them do it. You know, if all we had done is just not turn the ball over, probably would have beat the Texans by 20 points.
Yep.
So they played down to the competition in that regard.
Yep, they sure did. All right, hey, we'll get to the one move each AFC team should have made. Pro Football Focus had a piece on that. I've not looked at it yet. I'm going to try to guess. Seth's seen it. I'm going to try to guess it. I'm going to narrow down this the honeymoon is over moment here down to a few, and I might put up a poll on this thing, but I think there's a few instances this season that have separated themselves on the text page as to when Texan fans, their mood turned significantly with their relationship with this team. We'll go to the 5-Hour Energy fan line for that, and that's all coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, we got some breaking news in the NFL. Daniel Jones has found a new home.
Is it Minnesota?
It is Minnesota. Give him a ding, Ben. Give him a ding for that. Hell, you know
that
what?
That was just one of the speculated areas.
Seth, there's 31 other teams in the league besides the Giants. I'm going to acknowledge Seth Payne for that one.
Acknowledge me.
I will. I'm going to acknowledge him right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Vikings are the home for wayward, failed New York tippy-top draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Darnold having a pretty good year. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Now Daniel Jones wants to get put through that Sam Darnold car wash, apparently. That's a good place to go. Daniel Jones certainly, I mean, the Vikings are they're a Super Bowl contender. They're not the best team in the NFC, but they're 9-2. And I think ultimately Darnold is probably what limits them compared to, say, the Lions or the Eagles maybe in the NFC. But they're a good team who could easily get to the Super Bowl. Daniel Jones just goes there, and that's probably all about getting in a room with Kevin O'Connell, I would imagine.
Right, if you're Daniel Jones, a long-term move.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. I need I haven't had the right kind of instruction since the coach there at Duke that everybody loves so much.
David Cutcliffe.
Yeah. That you know what? I bet David Cutcliffe was involved in the decision making. Because Cutcliffe's the guy that the Mannings would go back to every offseason and kind of break their game. Peyton and Eli would go back and start from scratch, like IDing coverages and things like that. Like from the very basics, they would work back up through all the mental side of everything to kind of just to really just look for blind spots and all of that. So, I bet Cutcliffe recommended that, or at least was part of recommending that.
Yep. The one move each AFC South or each AFC team should have made in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. So Pro Football Focus, I was just trying to look for some information. I stumbled across this article, and it was from a couple weeks ago, but it still holds. They gave recommendations for something that they should have done in the offseason for each of these teams. Guess what they said that the Texans should have done?
Is this a situation where the obvious answer is the right? Like, their offensive line stinks.
Yeah, they should have gone out and
interior O-line?
Simple. It was pretty easy. That was a pretretty easy test I gave you.
That was the $100 question on who wants to be a millionaire.
Your interior offensive line, as of 2 weeks ago, was 28th in pass blocking grades, 30th in run blocking grades.
Say that again. Say that.
Interior offensive line, they were 28th in pass blocking grades and 30th in run blocking grades.
Can I just tell you my first reaction to that when you say that? When you say that their pass blocking grade is 28th, my reaction is there are four teams that are worse than the Texans' interior offensive line at protecting the quarterback. Like, who are the teams that are worse than them in that metric, and how many quarterbacks has that line sent to the infirmary from the sheer pounding that they've taken?
Like, I know the really bad offensive lines, like, in total right now are the Cowboys.
Yeah, that,
I mean, they're...
Sounds right.
We saw that. The Raiders. The Saints. Okay. Those are the entire offensive line.
Yeah.
Because even the Saints, like, Trevor Penning's the opposite of Laremy Tunsil. I see all these O-line nerds tweet out about how incredible Trevor Penning is as a run blocker. And it's true. He does some really impressive things. But I'm like, it's 2024. He gets destroyed. And part of his run blocking, it's always, like, some impressive clip of him driving a 220-pound guy out of bounds or something. Yeah. There's woefulness all around. The problem is, if you look at those teams, the Cowboys, the Raiders, the Saints, let's say, the Rams and the Jaguars. Those are the five worst offensive lines, at least as
of... Oh, that's good. The Jags are down there? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. That makes me feel good about this weekend, that the Jags are down that far. Okay, so the obvious answer to that question...
The Titans had a horrible offensive line, too. And the Texans took advantage of it.
Right.
They took advantage of it.
Yeah.
Titans have a horrible offensive line, but hey, you know what? They got a couple good wide receivers like Calvin Ridley.
They did.
You know? Now all of a sudden you're facing the play. You're facing the team that Calvin Ridley was at last year, the Jaguars, and lo and behold, the Jaguars have Brian Thomas.
They did part of the job. I mean, they got 8 sacks, but they did allow Tony Pollard to run for a buck 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They didn't defend the run very well. Hopefully it's better against the Jags. I liked hearing that about the Jags. All right, so if that question, what's the one move each AFC team should have made in the offseason, and the answer to the Texans is the obvious one. If I had found that article and made you guess, you would have guessed interior offensive line also. What would number two be on the list for you? What would be, if you can't take off interior offensive line off the table, what's the next move the Texans should have made in retrospect this offseason?
It's a really good question. I think finding a different backup running back, for one.
Yep.
Because Damian Pierce has had two big moments this year. Three, really. I mean, it's a couple nice returns, one really nice long run.
Yeah.
But his injury issues have continued to be an issue. He hasn't really flashed as a runner other than that one play versus the Patriots. It would feel weird to say, okay, safety. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot of our listeners, again, I've eaten a lot of crow this morning, everybody.
You have.
I got feathers coming out of my mouth every time I sneeze.
Picking it out of his teeth, yeah.
Yes. I've eaten a lot of crow, a lot of corvid death this morning.
That's right.
Because I've conceded victory to a lot of you, the people that in the offseason, our one listener especially, who was adamant about the fact that why are the Texans not giving Jarrett Patterson a chance to compete
right
at center or guard. Yep, you win that argument.
He's right, yeah.
You win that argument. And then, yeah, the people that were clamoring for Justin Simmons or anybody else at safety, 100%, because right now, man, it's thin right there.
Yeah.
And you're going up against good offenses or Will Levis. It hurts you. It can come back and bite you.
I would say you nailed it. I think the depth at running back and the depth in the secondary. You have this many positions where if you get hit with an injury to your starter, you're dipping into some real, real, like, low-level street-type free agents is troubling. I don't know what happens. If Joe Mixon goes out, this offense is sunk. You know, like, it's bad.
By the way, those rankings, I don't know what the hell I was looking at. I was wrong on the bottom five. Okay. This makes more sense.
This is the bottom five offensive lines.
Bottom five. Patriots are last,
yep,
according to PFF. Bengals are 31st.
Okay.
Titans are 30th.
Okay.
Texans are 29th.
Yep.
And the Giants are 28th.
That's that overall offensive sense. Line play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
29th, huh?
I was in a world where there were 22 teams in the NFL, apparently.
That's okay. You were parking back.
I started at 22 and
simpler time
backwards.
And place back in the, you know, back in the 60s where everything was cool. It was no problems at all. Yeah. Okay, so the honeymoon is over moments. That's been sort of a theme since 8 o'clock because I had a listener to the Hutopia podcast pose the question in the mailbag episode, what was your honeymoon is over moment for the Texans for this season? In other words, what was the moment or window of time where your mood changed about this team from hope and happiness to being upset, anxious, maybe even angry about the team? Mine was the Jets game, you know, the end of the Jets game where I'm like, I cannot believe they just lost to the Jets, a team whose fans were chanting, sell the team at halftime. Seth, yours was sort of a combo window of the Jets game into the Lions game, specifically when the Texans had a chance to go up 30-13. And CJ just underthrows badly an interception to Tank Dell.
Yeah, he was late to make the decision to throw to Tank Dell and then underthrew him to a Tank Dell that could have been wide open in any part of like one third of the end zone. He had a whole third of the end zone to explore.
Think about
to really
that.
Use the space, you know?
And
he would have been wide open. And that right there was where I felt like, okay, something's wrong with this offense. Something's wrong with CJ. This just doesn't look right. And then you stack that on top of the fact that they had just lost to the Jets, and just got completely shut out in the second half of that game. That was that whole period there was rough for me.
You hit that play, you're up 30-13, and I think they go on to win that game if they hit that play and they're up 30. Like, the defense was playing well enough to hold a 30-13 lead midway through the third quarter, I think.
It's almost like CJ in his mind was like, wait a second, isn't this the second half?
Oh, we're not supposed to score.
I shouldn't have a chance to. Oh, I guess I better throw it.
I better throw it. And of all the DBs to intercept it, Carlton Davis, who CJ and Tank tore up a year ago when he was playing for Tampa Bay. I mean,
he was victimized and humiliated going into that
game. Yeah, I mean, that was a kind of an under-the-radar thing. The Carlton Davis, the fourth or whatever he is, revenge game in that game.
He heard about it that week too, Carlton Davis.
I bet he did.
And he remembered it, you know?
I bet he did.
Kudos to you, Carlton.
The third one that I would say honeymoon is over moment that's getting the most run on the 5-Hour Energy fan line is early in the season. There are people who are saying the Minnesota game. They were so angry with, you get off to a 2-0 start. A 2-0 start with two wins that you probably should have won by more in both of those games. So you're already kind of sloppy in a winning situation over the Colts and the Bears in weeks 1 and 2. And then you go to Minnesota and you just get embarrassed from jump in that game. And so there's a lot of people saying honeymoon was over in week 3.
You know, I guess maybe it just comes through your individual scale for pessimism, or maybe you just see things more clearly. I was able to make excuses for that game, like that weren't, you know, they're still excuses. They still stink whenever you're making an excuse.
Yep.
But it was early enough in the season against a defense that's really hard to figure out. It's early in the year when you don't have any film. Flores was calling the game differently than he had previously. So there was a lot that was new about that defense, and it was really confusing. And that kind of that's come back around a little bit. You know, the Vikings aren't ambushing people the way they were early in the season. But in hindsight especially, sure. Everything that showed up in that game continued to be an issue. The other excuse that I made for them at the time was, and it wasn't an excuse I felt great about, was, all right, well, you don't have Joe Mixon, and it's not It's still BS because it's an excuse, but at the very least, it should be better with Joe Mixon. And what we've seen since Joe Mixon has returned is that, yeah, he's still capable of churning out lots of yardage,
he's
doing
good
things.
Yeah.
But on a down-by-down basis, they don't consistently run the ball well.
Nope.
And when they go up against genuinely good run defenses, like the Titans and the Lions, those are the two good run defenses they faced with Joe Mixon. He's averaged less than 2 yards per carry.
All right.
So it's like it's bad. It's really bad.
So if I put this up in poll form, Pender poll on Twitter form, what should the four choices be? Jets game, Lions game, specifically Tank INT, Minnesota game. Should the fourth one be other, and then have people reply with what other is? Because I sense that those are the three that are getting the most run via the text page right now. All right, so fourth.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it.
Fourth will be other. And there may be, and other can
that's
be.
That's how the engagement farmers do it.
Other
too,
can be.
They know that that
right.
fourth one, oh, I'll get extra replies. And replies to those replies.
Good call, yeah. Seth. Yeah, absolutely. Engagement farmers. I am Farmer Sean. So I would say, I wonder, you know, what I would tell people when I put this up, it's appropriate if you'd like to answer the honeymoon's not over. Maybe you're able to put up with a lot. There's a lot of very tolerant spouses out there that put up with a lot, and they say, you know what? I knew what I was marrying here.
Oh, you know what? That's true. That's a good point. If we look at it that way, let's make that analogy.
Yeah.
How is a football season like a marriage?
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of marriages that, you know, the husband and wife aren't necessarily on the same page about some things early on. You don't realize that it was even going to be an issue.
Right.
Maybe you've been in a relationship for years, but it's different when you're married and cohabitating.
Yeah.
And that you can have a little bit of a rocky patch where you start to come to, you know, learn how you need to operate within that marriage. And then over time, it can become a very, very strong marriage.
Yes.
The Texans, though, the problem is that they started off with a honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
And then they hit their rocky stage.
Well, it turns out,
he's a much bigger drinker than I realized.
Well, yeah, like this
is
right.
She really just takes lots of things as insults, doesn't she? Oh boy. Where do I go from there? Boy, the way her ex-boyfriend wronged her seems to be coming up quite a bit.
Yes, yeah.
You gotta figure out a way to work through that stuff.
This is not leaving the toilet seat up stuff. This is deep-seated, leave the toilet seat up. That's, we got stuffed on fourth and one, but we still won the game. Yeah.
This is, you've got secret credit cards type
of
stuff.
Right.
And not in a cute little way.
Right.
Like in a seriously in debt, what are you doing to our credit rating as a couple?
Yeah. Not everybody does that. Okay. I'm just joking, Amy, if you're listening right now.
Why are you getting all these offers for payday loans?
Right.
I don't know. What the hell's going on?
Exactly. Reggie Atatula, not married. John Lopez, happily married for decades.
Yes.
And we just got to love each other better. That's the refrain.
That's
we just got to love each other
well,
more.
Well, do you guys have the... So the question I had posed, it came from the mailbag for my podcast, the Utopia Football Podcast. And the question was a good one. It was... When was your honeymoon is over moment for this team this year? Assuming you came in with great love, hope, and happiness for this team, which I think a lot of us did. Do you have one? Is there a moment where you're like...
That's a great question.
Mood,
and you're putting that as a poll.
Your mood... I'm going to put it up as a poll. Your mood turned on this team from hope and happiness to anger and anxiety.
Jets.
That was mine too.
Yeah.
Jets game.
Yeah.
Final whistle, final gun of the Jets game where I'm like, I can't believe that I've got to talk about this for three hours and then talk about it the next day.
You could talk yourself into all kinds of, this or that until the Jets game.
Then
you couldn't talk yourself into... I think we came in Monday and we both agreed.
That'd have been Friday at
Friday.
That point.
It was the very next day. The wounds were still fresh.
Yeah, like this is what they are. They're not what we thought they were.
Yeah, and it's definitely Jets for me because that's when I got more negative than I have been. I think we've had conversations about, I'm trying to find... I feel like I'm being real negative early on in the season. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, they were 6-3 after that.
Right. I felt like I was a lot negative early on in the season, and it was kind of identifying that, hey, the process doesn't look quite right, but you're getting the results. And I was like, you know what? I'll acquiesce and I'll fall back to the place where as long as you're getting wins and you're progressing forward, right? And I was like, all right. We're getting to that place, and I was like, I can live with that. I can live with the progressive approach, and then the Jets broke it for me. So it's definitely
We identified a medical condition during this show. It was pretty impressive. It's a condition known as premature adulation.
Right. You realize
we should have gone into this season with three emotional condoms.
Yeah.
We all succumbed to it. It happens to young men.
We did.
It happens to a lot of honeymoons. Yeah. Works out that way.
Yeah. That explains the shame, though. Yeah. That does explain the shame.
The shame. Yeah. All right, on that
You're just so pretty. Seriously, look at that depth chart. Yeah. I'm just so excited.
It's the hottest depth chart ever.
I was just like, oh my God, I've never been with a depth chart like that before.
It's true.
And then I come in and I'm like, ah.
Oh my God.
My eyes were clouded.
All right.
Yes.
We are done. We are out of time.
I love you guys.
Oh, I love you too. You're listening to KLT, KLT HD2, and Odyssey Station. Seth, happy Thanksgiving and antibodies to you, my
happy
friend.
Thanksgiving and all the emotional condoms to you. I hope you get emotional condoms in your Christmas condom.
Thank you.
Okay. What?
Christmas condom.
The handoff of this show to you guys the last 2 days.
I love it. I don't know what you're talking
Christmas
about.
Christmas condoms.
Amy and I hang condoms. We hang gigantic condoms from the mantle.
Yeah. Yeah.
With condoms inside of them. Yeah. It's inception of condoms is what it is.
Shout out to all the kids out of school.
Yeah. No, they're out of school.
It.
It's fine.
It was the holidays.
Yeah, no, we're good.
All right, we're done. Seth? I'll talk to you on Friday, buddy. Have a good happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Sure.